in this case, he's not ready for first call.
He's not, no.
I've had a day, so if you bitches want to throw down, I'll make that happen.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 334, recorded on December 2nd, 2013.
Hello, and welcome to the 334th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 167th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
I am Jordan Lund.
I am Jonah Fowle.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Right, so no gaming flashback this week.
And apparently we have no gaming flashback, which totally kills my my opening there.
Well, no, it didn't say any gaming flashback. It just said around from around the industry. That's it.
Yeah, I know, but it has a much better cadence.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. What have you been playing?
Zelda.
That's it. Zelda. So the
quiet. Zelda will smite you all.
Okay, stop. So you're playing the Wii U remake of the Nintendo. Oh wait, no, wait. No, it's a 3DS.
I'm playing the completely all new content, A Link Between Worlds.
Right, but that's on the 3DS, right?
It's on the 3DS.
Okay, that's no, because they're actually making. Didn't they? Because the thing that confused me was they have a remake of Wind Waker on the Wii U.
Remake of Wind Waker, really? Who cares?
You don't like that game?
I beat it 10 years ago, like everybody else did.
Yeah, but you probably beat the Link to the Past as well.
Yes, but this is an entirely new game.
Not entirely.
It's not a remake.
It's not a remake. This is not a skin patch.
It's a sequel.
It's a sequel.
Well, speaking of sequels, what have you been playing, Jordan?
I have been playing Assassin's Creed 4. I actually clocked 20 hours on Assassin's Creed 4 in one day.
Of course you did.
You know what?
I did.
If anybody's played Sid
Thank
Meier's,
you, Thanksgiving break.
If anybody's played Sid Meier's Pirates, much of the core gameplay from that is in Assassin's Creed 4.
Yeah, there's a lot of pirating around. There's a lot of places to explore. There's a lot of things to do in the different locations. And what I find fascinating, and I don't know if maybe my brain is broken or what the deal is, but I loved doing this in Assassin's Creed 2.
Okay.
And I hated doing it in Assassin's Creed 3. I don't understand mechanically what the difference is between 2, 3, and 4. But 4 made it fun again, and 3 did not, and I don't know why.
Are you talking about the entire game?
If I cared enough to play them all, I could probably tell you.
Are you talking about the entire game?
No, I'm not talking about the entire game. I'm talking about the collection quests.
Oh, okay.
And going around and getting all the different animus fragments and stuff like that. They do appear on the minimap.
Well, there you go. Well, actually, so did the other stuff. But, I mean, when things appear in the minimap, it's sort of like it isn't so much of a grind. Like, in the first Batman Arkham Asylum, you knew where all the Joker, the Riddler stuff was, right? So I actually 100%ed that because it was fun and I knew what to do. And they didn't make me do anything outrageously difficult just to find them, you know? And then in the sequels, it's like you have to have these skills, you have to use this, or there's a timer attached to this and that. And it's like, I don't care. I just want a sequential thing in which I just pick up stuff and, you know, it's shown on the map for me.
Gotcha.
So you mean you want a completely on-rails experience?
No, it's not on-rails. It's just but it shows you where it is, and if you want to do it, you can do it, and you don't have to jump too many hoops. Like, you don't have to do a timer thing in which, okay, first you throw 3 batarangs really quickly all at once, and then you have to fly over to this thing 10 feet away and accurately press that button before it goes off. I don't want that, you know?
I can see where that would get annoying.
I mean, in Batman Arkham, one of the things was it'll give you a riddle, right? And you'd have to find where the riddle answer was, you know.
Oh, you didn't take a picture of it?
Yeah, sorry. Well, you have to scan it, but yeah. So that sort of stuff was fine. It was fun. It fit in with the story, you know. And oh, by the way, so did getting those Arkham memories. That was pretty cool too. You know, in which the spirit of Arkham spoke to you about why he created the asylum and stuff like that.
Right, right. I remember that.
Yeah. But anyways, maybe it's also the fact that you're playing the game on your new console that's making it fun too.
It could be. I don't know.
I have to say that's what made Batman fun for me.
Playing it on the Wii U.
Playing it on the Wii U, because I have become a big fan of second screen experiences. I'm playing my DS right now.
Oh, that actually fits in with a story late in the podcast. But
I know.
But the thing is, it isn't working with me in Dead Rising 3 because of the freaking boss battle. And, you know, I haven't gone back to it because, one, I'm playing a crap ton of NBA 2K14 on it, right? So I'm having fun on the Xbox One and staying away from Dead Rising 3 until I'm in the mood to deal with a stupid boss battle again. I also was playing the Stanley Parable for the first time, so that was an interesting experience, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about the Stanley Parable. Yeah.
I've heard no thing.
Okay, you know what, Paul? It's on sale on Steam for $9. I suggest you play it because...
Oh my God, who has time? I barely have time to do this show.
Okay, I'm not going to say it's a 10-minute playthrough because that would be inaccurate, but I'm going to say it's very short experiences. And basically what it does is it takes the entire video game playing thing and makes it a meta thing. You know, it examines why you do things in video games, basically.
I don't know. I'm pretty content with my Zelda right now.
I would suggest playing it when you get a chance at some point. And it's not one of those games that's going to get old either. It's not going to age at all.
There's a free demo of it.
Yeah, but...
You know what game doesn't age?
What?
Kingdom Hearts, the original.
Well, yeah, okay, whatever. But you know that Kingdom Hearts 3 is coming out on Wii U, Xbox One, and PlayStation 4.
I'm so excited.
Okay. Anyways, we're going to move on to the first... news item, and it has to do with drones and not bombing people. Go ahead.
That you're aware of.
Well,
rare for us. Breaking news.
Go ahead, Jordan.
Amazon testing package delivery by drone, and this comes to us from USA Today. Amazon.com is testing delivering packages using drones, CEO Jeff Bezos said on the CBS TV news show 60 Minutes on Sunday. The idea would be to deliver packages as quickly as possible using the small unmanned aircraft through a service the company is calling Prime Air, the CEO said. The goal of the new delivery system is to get packages into customers' hands in 30 minutes or less, the world's largest internet retailer said. Putting Prime Air into commercial use will take some number of years as Amazon develops the technology and waits for the Federal Aviation Administration to come up with rules and regulations. One day, Prime Air vehicles will be as normal as seeing mail trucks on the road today, the company said. This is the latest futuristic effort by Bezos, who was an e-commerce pioneer in the 1990s and more recently popularized the e-reader while pursuing personal projects such as private space flight and a 10,000-year clock built inside a mountain. It sounds to me like Jeff Bezos is one step away from a James Bond villain at this point.
He's more like Richard Garriott, you know?
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Drones have mostly been used by the U.S. military to shoot missiles at enemy combatants in countries such as Afghanistan and Pakistan. However, the cost of these unmanned aircraft has dropped precipitously in recent years, making them more accessible to commercial users such as companies, small businesses, and entrepreneurs. However, the FAA currently limits the use of drones in the U.S. to public entities such as police forces and hobbyists, meaning that the devices cannot be used in return for payment. The regulator said recently that it plans to have regulations governing commercial use in place by 2015.
You see these things in action?
I have seen the quad drones, and it's fascinating watching them work as like a fleet. That's it's really neat to watch. What my envision is a drone in a football or basketball stadium shooting t-shirts at people. That's really all I want to see.
All right, you can just order it on your iPhone.
Yeah, thunk.
But the thing is that, you know, for one thing, it's not going to work in a city. Number one.
And then Maude Flanders died.
From what I understand, there's a Chinese delivery company already doing this.
I don't see how it could work in a city. Yeah, is it going to go outside your window on the seventh floor?
Here's the thing. It's probably going to not go like right to your door. It's probably going to go to, you know, a collection center down the street.
What's the point?
And someone will bring it to you. I mean, because they'll have gotten it from their warehouse two towns over.
I already have Amazon lockers, though, for that. You know,
I hope it'll be like Fifth Element, where an old Chinese man in a floating junk comes and knocks on your window.
It'll be just like it'll be just like the satellite is now at the moment, where, you know, you have to wait, you know, they, now that they have laws that regulate Fios and whatever other, you know, internet services that are provided by fiber optics as opposed to the older copper wires, you know, you have to wait for the laws and then, you know, they roll it out on an individual basis. Oh, so you probably need to, you know, enable the service, and it wouldn't surprise me if they expected you to pay for a landing pad somewhere
on your roof.
On your roof or in your backyard, you know, whatever,
on an apartment building roof, because there's no way that you could have personal service coming straight into your thing. There's no way it can go into your mailbox either.
Exactly, and then that gets added to your rental fee of a office building.
You know, I there's just so much that can go wrong with this. Just, you know, the thing that strikes me first is vandalism. Okay, you're gonna have people throwing rocks at these things to try and knock them down. It's gonna be a sport.
Well, and that, and you'll have people making Amazon purchases just because, hey, free drone.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and it also wouldn't surprise me if people trying to knock them down just to get the free merch, even if they didn't want the drone.
The answer for that is
their exploits coming up to say, "Oh, I didn't get my thing. The drone must have gotten knocked out of the sky."
Well, here's the thing: is that you can be damn sure that it's probably going to have some sort of electronic monitoring on it, so that, you know, you can't really fool around with it. And the penalty for doing something like that will probably
death.
Something harsh, but not that harsh. You know.
Death.
But, you know, if you're in a suburb, I can just imagine people's expression on their faces when they see this thing flying to your house. You know, you're waiting on your lawn, and they say, "What are you waiting for?" I say, "I'm waiting for my drone." Say, "You're waiting for your what?" And all of a sudden you hear this.
And you know what? It probably would. This sounds like one of those things that would be unveiled in a suburb first, just so they could work the kinks out.
Although,
now, the logical extension of this, though, would be to have the drone... Have the drone tied to your GPS signal on your phone, so that your package could find you no matter where you are. And the
just
little drone,
like
would,
the government,
just the
like,
little drone would come hunt you down and deliver goodness to you.
Well, considering the accuracy of the military drones, you know, don't get your hopes up too high. By the way, this is just yet another example of where the military influences everyday technology. You know, almost all of our technology comes from initial military application.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
My DS. Velcro. DS that I'm playing right now?
Velcro came out of the military. Came out of the space program, actually.
Plastic. You know, everything. I mean, Jeeps.
Jeeps, yeah. I mean, Hummers.
Wait. I got one for you. Bouncy rubber balls. The polymers that were used to make rubber balls,
the hard rubber were vulcanized rubber,
have
you guys heard the conspiracy theorist side of the whole Amazon thing? Because there's a whole
there's
a whole dark side to this, because everything they're talking about is fairly fanciful by our current understanding. Maybe 10 or 20 years from now it'll be commonplace, but as of right now, nobody's expecting Amazon to flip the switch on this tomorrow, right?
No. I mean, they're still doing the Amazon lockers, which I'm glad are still around. Because remember, I'd reported earlier that the Amazon lockers in Gristides had closed. You know, they removed them. But now I find out that they just closed them in there. They're, you know, in there and another – and UPS. Not UPS. I forgot the name of that. It's not obviously not UPS. Anyway.
So like a privatized mailbox is what you're saying at the grocery store just for you?
Well, now it's at Rite Aid. And the thing is that it's sort of like not having to pay for a P.O. box, like a temporary P.O. box. They send it to your locker and you just it sends you a code on your email. Your package has arrived. You pipe in this code and your locker opens up and you can take it out. And I've used it. It's really handy.
The conspiracy theory is that the reason Amazon made this announcement on 60 Minutes on Sunday was so that everybody would be talking about Amazon on Cyber Monday.
Of course it is. Yeah. Duh.
But you know what? On the other hand, I don't think it's going to raise their sales that much.
I don't think that they can possibly raise their sales that much. Anything Amazon does
I'm still waffling on this laptop thing. It's like 1 hour more until I have to make a decision on whether to purchase this laptop or not, or forever hold my peace.
Clock's ticking.
Yeah. On the other hand, there's always December 26th, you know.
Yep.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Oh, I thought this was you. Hold on a second.
Why did you
scrolling. Microsoft advises. That's what I'm saying. Did I not just say Microsoft? Listeners, did I not just say Microsoft? Microsoft advises gamers against turning the Xbox One into a dev kit. And this comes to us from Eurogamer. Earlier this summer, when Microsoft announced that the Xbox One would allow self-publishing, it also boasted the enhanced enticing claim. Yes, I understand. It's at an 8-point font, people. Enticing claim that, quote, every Xbox One can be used for development. The platform launched a couple of weeks back, and there was nary a word about this feature. But YouTuber Game Tuts, all one word, has discovered the secret code to unlock the mythical developer settings menu on a retail Xbox One. Now, before you get all excited, know that Microsoft is warning people against doing this, as it could mess up your console if you've not been explicitly given permission to access this by Microsoft in the form of a sandbox ID. Quote, please don't mess with anything here for the time being, especially the sandbox ID. An Xbox One developer warned on a Reddit thread about the very same issue. Quote, you risk putting your Xbox into a boot loop. Microsoft has issued the following statement, quote, changing the settings in this menu is only intended for developers for Xbox One, and this alone does not turn the console into a development kit. We strongly advise customers against changing these settings, as it could result in their Xbox One becoming unusable. Customers who have put their consoles into developer setting can revert by restoring factory defaults under System/Setting, select Restore Factory Default.
So, Jordan or Paul, boot loop, does that mean it just keeps on turning on, then turning off, turning on, then turning off?
Yeah.
Sounds like it. Yeah.
That's exactly what that means.
So, I mean, there is a benefit sort of to having your Xbox be a dev kit, in that you can get, if you're a journalist, aside from being a developer, but if you're a journalist, you know, they have on the Xbox 360 dev kits and the I forgot what they call it, that special online thing. Shoot, I forgot the name of it. But, you know, in which there's loads of pre-release software that reviewers use to check out games and, you know, do previews on, right?
Running unsigned code, right.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is part of the entire thing that Microsoft is doing to try and win back indie developers. And the other thing is that they're doing the, if you sign up with us, you get Unity for free, you know, that sort of thing. And even if you don't, they'll still help you and all that stuff, you know. And also relax their certification as well. But and also dev kits are really expensive. Or they used to be, I mean.
It seems really poorly thought out to have that feature enabled in the menu for people to mess around with.
It's hidden. You see, you have to do stuff in order to bring it out. And okay. there better be some level of protection there. Yeah,
yeah.
The YouTube video shows you how you can do it if you want to. And it's not exactly AABB, up, down, left, right, you know, start, you know, that sort of thing. But
I've not heard somebody mess that up so bad.
Yeah, I didn't cheat on my NES, thank you.
Okay. Yeah, right.
I didn't cheat. Who cheated? Did you cheat, Paul?
I never cheated. They put it there for my amusement.
Right. Yeah. I consider it not cheating when I add money to The Sims. When I do ka-ching. It's not cheating. It's just balancing an unfair gameplay mechanic.
If it's in-game, it's not technically a cheat. Even though in Assassin's Creed 4, they actually have cheats that you can unlock.
You know, it's really
but,
nice.
But if you
it's
use
not
a cheat,
cheat. It's, it's unlockable content.
They actually call it a cheat. They're marketing. It says you've unlocked a new cheat.
Really, you get an achievement for cheating?
if you use the cheat on a mission, it will not save your progress.
Oh, okay. You know that one thing that I liked, and I forgot what the game was that if you kept failing at a boss fight, it would say, "Okay, you know what? You don't have to do this if you don't want to. Just move on."
Yeah.
You know, that's what I want to see in a boss.
The you suck mode.
Yeah, but you know what? Sometimes we just want to get on with the game. We don't have to keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. We have time.
Right.
But actually, you know, Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2 kept the cheats from the original game in. So if you wanted to use the original cheats, you could. So, And by the way, that's the way some people, the only way some people could finish Half-Life because of the stupid Zen level.
Anyway. I never played Half-Life that far. I just got totally bored with it.
I never played Half-Life.
Wow. That's like saying you never played Zelda.
I don't believe you.
I never played Zelda.
Those two things are absolutely not synonymous.
Oh, yes, they are. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. There is, quote-unquote, no lack of ideas at DICE. CEO ponders local weather for Battlefield. And this comes to us from Strategy Informer. Battlefield 4 supports a geo leaderboard, says CEO Patrick Suterland at DICE, which tells you that the best... Battlefield 4 supports a geo leaderboard, says CEO Patrick Soderlund at DICE, which tells you the best players in your local area. What if they could pull your local weather too and have it appear in-game? Soderlund says, frankly, that's one dumb idea from me, but it's kind of cool. The cloud-based world we now inhabit allows for so many experiments with features. He said to The Guardian, I sit on the floor above Battlefield development team and there's no lack of ideas down there. Hopefully these ideas include a trouble-free launch. Wait, it's already launched though. It's just a matter of how many of them are feasible and what we can do. He continued, the studio boss then revealed one of his ideas. Didn't quite make the cut this time around. Okay, it did already launch. I don't know what... I see. They're actually... the writer is ripping on the fact that Battlefield 4 had a tremendously buggy launch, just like Battlefield 3 did. So, yeah, that was the author of this piece's opinion. Not exactly what the article is. One of these things I think is cool in Battlefield 4 is a geo leaderboard. You can find out who your neighborhood is, say the best assault player. That's cool. And we take a step further if we had servers that were just pulls in things as simple as weather and the day of time for the local era. If the server is in Stockholm and it's sunny, what if the map is sunny too? What if it's a snowing and dark in Moscow? Okay, well, let's have the servers there playing snowy and dark maps. You can look at the possibilities and realize you can do so many more things in the cloud-enabled world that we couldn't do before. Frankly, that's a dumb idea for me, but it's kind of cool. I'll just delete the rest of the thing that said the entire thing before that. I don't know if I'd want to play on a map that's mimicking the weather outside all the time. Maybe I just want to escape that weather. You know,
so Oregon, it would be rain, 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 rain.
You know, it's
rain,
funny.
Rain, cloudy, rain.
Every time
rain.
I've been in Seattle, it's been hot and sunny. You know,
because you just bring the sunshine to wherever you go, Jonah.
What are you gonna turn me into that girl all of a sudden?
Bring the sunshine.
No, that's hair.
What I find funny about this is that, you know, he implies at the end of the article that this is the sort of thing that we could only do with cloud-enabled stuff. And besides making the obvious cloud pun, I'm not going to go that route. This actually was a feature in Metropolis Street Racer on Sega Dreamcast in 2000. So this is not a new idea. It's been done before and without the cloud.
Well,
so,
I mean, what's going on is that it's a lot easier to do. I mean,
I'm sure it's easier to do. Just like, you know, you were no longer dealing with a dial-up modem either. But, you know, it's not anything revolutionary.
You know, the thing about the cloud and that is that I said this before the podcast, and that is I'm really enjoying my Xbox One, right? But I also see evidence, at least to my eyes, that if they had gone the entire always online route and, you know, always depending on the cloud route, it would have been a disaster. It'll be sort of like what Sony's doing with Gaikai. It seems like they're putting a lot of their chips in Gaikai, and that's not going to work.
Well, they spent an awful lot of money on Gaikai is the thing. They've got to get something out of it. Yeah.
Well, weren't they going to do that with TVs or incorporate in TVs or set-top boxes or something like that?
It was the Vita box is going to be Gaikai enabled as well.
Yeah. Have you gotten the Vita to work well with your PS4 yet? Just wondering.
I have gotten it to work a couple of times. It seems fairly random. If I'm in the same room as the PlayStation 4, it works fine.
Yeah, but that's not the
point,
is it?
If I walk into the bedroom, no, it loses the signal.
Yeah,
so,
but the thing that people were dreaming about was being on the train, right? Or being
I was telling people PS4 from the out front that was not gonna happen. And there have been isolated cases of people getting that to work if their LTE connection is fast enough and they can, you know, pair to their Wi-Fi hotspot and get a speedy enough connection. Some folks have gotten it to work. I can't get it to work from my bedroom. So, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, Battlefield has been such a disaster.
But it doesn't matter because I've been playing Caraway anyway. So,
anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. I believe this is you, Jordan.
Xbox One beats PS4 sales at Walmart and Target.
Don't worry, this is going to include everything. So,
GamesIndustry.biz. The Xbox One was the best-selling game hardware at Walmart and Target on Black Friday, according to retail research from InfoScout. According to a post on the company blog, Microsoft's new console accounted for 31% of console sales at the retailers on Friday, outpacing the PlayStation 4's 15% share, which was only enough to make it the fourth best-selling system of the day. The Xbox 360, bolstered by a $99 sale price at Walmart, was the second bestseller of Black Friday, accounting for 30% of systems sold. The PS3, which was heavily discounted at $149, was third, with a 15% share of consoles sold. Nintendo brought up the rear, with Wii U accounting for just 6% of sales, while the original Wii scraped out a 1% share. According to a survey of Black Friday receipts from 5,000 InfoScout panelists, the Xbox One was the sixth best-selling item at Walmart, behind a trio of television sets, an HP laptop, and a $300 16-gig Apple iPad Mini, which originally sells for $320. So, wow, a $20 discount.
$20 off?
Woo, boy.
I'll buy 100.
The PlayStation... The PlayStation 4 set sales records on launch in the UK, outselling the entire lifetime sales of the Wii U.
Wow. No, actually, you know, $300 for an iPad Mini, that's kind of tempting, even if it's just a 16 gigabyte.
$300 for an iPad Mini.
It's $20 off. Please tell me you are not this gullible, all of you.
But still, it's $20. I could
$320 would be acceptable as well.
It's still $300.
Well, is there something wrong with the iPad Mini?
Yeah, do you know what else I could buy for $300?
Not an iPad Mini, apparently. Although I really, if I'm going to get another iPad, it's going to be an iPad Air. I mean, I might as well.
So,
my God, you mindless drones.
The piece missing from this article and all the other articles talking about the Black Friday sales is that, yes, the Xbox One outsold the PS4 in the United States on Black Friday. Black Friday was also the same day that Sony launched the console in Europe and Australia. So all of their stock, all of their production line was gearing up to do stuff for Europe and for Australia, was not geared for Black Friday. So you can't sell the stock if it's not in the stores.
Well, here's the thing. Actually, another little news item that's not in here is that Sony said that they have a reserve of PS4s for people who just happen to have the blue light of death. So you know, so they're withholding stock as well.
So Sony has a blue light of death problem.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. That. Yeah, it was I don't know what the percentage is. We haven't gotten a fix on it. It was enough that there was enough people
that
they had to do something about it, right? But it wasn't something rampaging like the Xbox 360 blue light, at least at launch. But it was enough that, you know, Sony had to...
When you turn on the PlayStation 4, the light on the top turns blue and it glows and pulses. And then when the system initializes, it's supposed to turn white. For some folks, that light never turned white.
It just remained blue
and pulsing, and nothing would happen.
By the way, why do these companies keep on making these obvious things? It's like the red light of death. Yeah, don't make the red light of death. Just have something else go on so that they don't have to say, so they can't turn it into a meme. You know, one of the things that Microsoft did after a couple of years was remove the red light.
Right, right.
You know,
one of the leading rumors was that folks at Foxconn were actually sabotaging systems because they were unhappy with working conditions.
Yeah, that was we already.
I just want to take this opportunity to point out that I have never, ever once had a single problem with any Nintendo product.
Well,
each and every one of them has functioned every time as designed.
Well, you're lucky because that's not exactly true with the Wii U, for one. I mean,
works totally fine. Mine's a launch.
Yeah, didn't break, or you didn't come with a broken controller. We know.
Nope.
My first Game Boy Advance broke, and Nintendo tried to deny the warranty claim, saying that I did it. and I said, well, first off, I didn't do it, and secondly, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take the unit back, open it up. And if you can prove to me that I did it, I'll pay for the repair. I don't have a problem paying for the repair if I legitimately broke something. They said, finally accepted. They took the unit back, and then they returned me a nice letter and a new unit saying, we're sorry, we fixed it for you.
Yeah, I mean, that reminds me of with the iPad as well. It's sort of like, you know, it's when even if it's my fault and say, it gets wet, you know, what happened in a rainstorm, they can't prove that it was me. The thing never just burned out on me within the warranty. So, but yeah,
there are fluid detectors inside, and what they will do is they will say the fluid detectors are tripped. We're not saying you spilled water on it, but water got spilled on it.
Well, guess what? That's why it's no longer under warranty. So. I didn't say it was Apple.
That's why I always pop for the extra liquid warranty at Best Buy.
Yeah.
Well, I learned my mistake, and next time I get something like a iPad or something like that from anybody, I'm going to make sure I get the breakage contract, because it isn't enough that you get the accident, you know, because all that the regular contract cares about is if it burns out or something like that. No. I want it so that if my glass shatters or falls on the ground or something like that, I get coverage on that.
Screw that. I want to be able to throw mine under a truck and still get a replacement. Deliberately. And admit it to the customer service rep. I want to film that crap and put it on Instagram. And get
Letterman, Letterman did that way back in the day. He rented a convertible and they said, would you like the optional insurance on it? And he said, absolutely. I would love to have the optional insurance on this fine convertible. And then he took it through a car wash.
with the top down.
Yeah.
So anyway, the thing is that what I'm happy about my Xbox One, one thing I didn't mention is that I have a lot of friends on Xbox Live who are now playing Xbox One, and everybody else who doesn't is waiting for theirs. So at least I know I'll have a nice little group that I can play with. And I have some multiplayer games. I mean, Dead Rising 3 is a multiplayer game, and I'm wondering if I should do the friggin' boss battle with someone else. That might make it easier, actually, now that I think about it. Although I don't like games that enforce you do co-op in order to beat it, you know?
There are some games that when you go into co-op mode, they make the game harder.
Yeah, but you know what?
Because you have two people.
Yeah, but in this case, beating this boss is basically coordination. I'm over there, he's over there. He can't fire to both of us at the same time, basically.
I see.
So, yeah. But anyways, you know, so one thing I should have asked is what people have you been in contact with other PS4 owners, Jordan?
I do not know any personally PS4 owners or Xbox One owners.
How about you, Paul? Any Xbox, any Wii U owners?
No, actually, I tend to do most of my gaming alone.
So do I.
Just like I do everything else. Wah, wah.
You know, it's really strange on both the PS4 and the Xbox One, and I didn't notice that
they die.
Brought it up. Have you noticed, Jordan? Well, I don't know, because it no longer has your friend has arrived notification. You know, when your friend logs on the Xbox 360, it goes, you know, and it says your friend is logged on, right? It doesn't do on the PS4, Xbox One, and that mystifies me.
That's all it takes to mystify you.
Notification. It's weird.
I know it doesn't do cross-generational notification. Like if one of my friends from the PlayStation 3 signs on, I won't see that.
Oh, I see my Xbox 360 friends on, because you know Xbox Live is Xbox Live is Xbox Live. And one of the cooler things is that they have the friend activity blade now, in which you have these huge things telling what your friends have been doing, you know, the achievements that they have or the clips they uploaded, and you just go to them and click on and all that stuff. But I don't understand why there's no friend notification on either console. Because you want that notification, hey, your friend just logged on, you know, so that you can go to him and say, you want to play this with me? You know, that sort of stuff. It just doesn't make sense. Just like the fact that I had to download the Blu-ray software just to play a friggin' DVD, you know, to play it on the Xbox One. Why isn't that already installed? was the 500 gigabyte hard drive that crowded, you know? It's just weird. I mean, all this, you know, it's amazing how unfinished both the Xbox One and the PS4 feel, despite being in development for the past few years.
And they were still rushed to market. And they still break.
Well, mine hasn't broken. Mine has been, you know, that's one thing. If there was going to be a break, it wasn't going to be a hardware break with Microsoft. That would have been a disaster, you know. You do have people, by the way, who complain that their DVDs are loud. But what I'm guessing and what some people admitted
was that my DVD is loud.
They put it vertically. And you ain't supposed to do that with this generation. They don't want you putting your console vertically. It has to be horizontal.
So wait, they just spent 5 years training everybody. Hey, this thing can go vertical. And they made new models that don't do that anymore. And now people want it and it's causing a problem?
I don't want it. I always played with Jordan, have you put your PS3 vertically?
Not in a long time, no. Although when I move it into the bedroom, finally, it will be vertical, yes.
Oh, okay.
I've only ever put them vertically.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Do you know why? They take up less space that way.
Well,
they do take up less space that way, yeah.
I live in a studio.
Yeah, so I live in a small, I don't live in a small apartment. My room is sort of smallish.
I live in a studio. I need the space.
By the way, Microsoft won with me in the fact that now my Xbox One is my entertainment device because I watch TV through it.
Lame.
Well, I'm lazy, you know.
Xbox One is the new water cooler. TV.
So we're clear here. Just so we're clear here, Jonah, you mean the Xbox One allows you to watch television on your television?
No, it allows me to
I'm shocked.
It allows me to do it voice activated, so I don't have to.
TV. Xbox is the new water
cooler. Xbox, go to Science Channel or watch Science Channel. It goes to Science. Xbox, watch ESPN. It goes to ESPN. You know, I don't have to memorize all those numbers anymore.
You are what is wrong with this country.
Hey, Paul, well, actually, we're going to get into this a little bit later. The other feature, you know, that... Oh, actually, this is this... Actually, that's a good segue to the next item. This is point you, Paul.
Epic says, quote, "We've yet to see the real value of second screen." And this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. "Whether it's navigating menus, selecting plays on a sports line, or throwing additional in-game information, maps, etc., second screen usage via tablets and smartphones has become much more prevalent among console titles today."
By the way, before you move on, we might as well include the Wii U tablet. You know that. So just not only just tablets, but the Wii U controller as well serves that purpose.
While some are, quote, convinced that second screen gaming is, quote, the future, others aren't so sure. In a recent interview with the A-List Daily, Epic Video Games Vice President Mark Ryan shared his thoughts. Quote, "I think we've yet to see the real value in the second screen idea, if you're talking about smart glass and companion apps and things like that. But that doesn't mean that it won't be big one day. I don't really know what that is yet," Ryan commented. "Where I really use smart glasses for choosing things from the menu and navigating the store instead of using the controller. It's great for watching a movie and then continuing it on my tablet when I walk away. There are lots of great uses and applications," he continued. "Where it fails into gaming, I don't know. I'm not sold on picking up my tablet to choose my play and then putting it back down and picking up my controller." That's because you don't have a Wii U. "It's kind of wonky. It's kind of a wonky way to choose to play. So I don't know if that's how it's going to go or not." No, it's going to be the Wii U. "Developers should try everything and have lots of fun with it. And sooner or later, there will be a killer app for that sort of thing too." Ryan also said that people need to stop thinking of tablets and mobile as being in competition with consoles, stating that he doesn't believe, quote, "the whole one defeats the other really is a thing. There's never going to be a one-to-one console to tablet because one you plug into a wall, one you carry around with you. That doesn't mean that they won't have the same amount of power and you won't be able to plug your tablet into a wall and add a controller and play like a console. I think that's inevitable. I think Apple's now embracing having a controller," he said.
Oh, you know, I'm going to say that those old Apple IIe controllers sucked. I mean, they really were bad. But
wait, there were Apple IIe controllers?
Apple IIc or whatever. Apple II controllers, yeah. You remember those they had the fat bases and the skinny little
I don't remember though. I don't remember any kind of controller.
Are those the same as like
IIs.
The Atari joystick?
No,
models?
It was much worse. But you know, NVIDIA Shield already did that. You know, it's a handheld that you can plug in and play games on, I guess. But I will say this, you know, the Dead Rising 3 smart glass app is amazing. Because sometimes it'll call you up and it'll give you the guy will talk to you as if you're listening to a cell phone and give you missions that way. So, you know, it makes me curious to see what other first-party smart glass apps do, because the NBA 2K 14 Smart Glass app does almost nothing, you know. But I mean, Paul, you know, you've been using the second screen for gaming longer than us, really.
Yeah, well, and you know what? As a game designer, that's part of the fun of my job, is trying to figure out the best way to squeeze value out of new technology like this when we're talking specifically about the Wii U. And, you know, also understanding the fact that nobody ever gives 100% of their attention to one thing anymore, the way that consoles have been traditionally used to. So if there was a way to make my Call of Duty playing, you know, that much more murderous, then people would go ahead and use the second screen of an app that they downloaded in conjunction with their Call of Duty rampaging. But nobody's designed a good enough, economical enough, widespread enough usage of that.
Well, let me ask you a question. What was the best use of the Wii U tablet controller that you've seen so far? Aside from watching TV while you play a game, that's not included.
Okay. Well, that is my personal favorite, I have to say. But I mean, the Nintendo entire DS line is completely based on this fact, and I really do enjoy, as I'm sitting here playing it now, the fact that I have my map out in front of me, because that helps me find things that I'm looking for and solve these puzzles in Zelda. One example.
I think the real killer app for second screen stuff is going to be Watch Dogs, which unfortunately got delayed until next year. But Watch Dogs really integrates the second screen as part of a unified gaming experience. Whereas right now,
Dead Rising 3 does, Jordan, it really does integrate everything into it, especially including turning your smart glass into an actual cell phone that people call you on, and also the other stuff, you know, like maps and all that stuff. But I know what you mean, because Watch Dogs, one of the main things about multiplayer is that you're going to be able to troll other people, you know, in their own game.
Correct. And the other part of it is that, you know, with a lot of the second screen stuff that's going on right now, whether it's the smart glass or whether it's the companion apps. There's a companion app for iOS and Android for Assassin's Creed 4. There's a companion app for Beyond Two Souls as well. But if you don't have those companion apps, it doesn't really feel like you're missing out on anything.
No.
And so, you know, Watch Dogs, I think, is really going to elevate it to a point where people are going to actively seek out, how do I get the second screen working with this thing?
Thing is that you get extra missions for free if you use the Smart Glass app in Dead Rising 3. I mean, you don't get those missions unless you're actually using the Smart Glass app.
Right.
But like I said, you know, one of the things that I hope doesn't happen is excessive microtransactions using the second screen. Because that would...
Well, of course that's going to happen.
Oh, you'd be surprised how fast that can happen. That's the sort of thing that would be a sort of like a waterfall effect. You know, once someone successfully uses it, everybody's going to use it.
And that's exactly where I started this conversation, is that not that it hasn't been done and not that great solutions to use this new technology haven't been come up with, you know, haven't been devised yet. It's the fact that they haven't been made economically feasible. So unless people are making money off of it, gamers, it's not going to happen.
Okay. We're going to move on to the next item, and I believe this is me. Sega, Shenmue 3 trademark listing a hoax. And this comes to us from Strategy Informer. Sega has dashed the hopes of eager gamers awaiting a sequel to their beloved open-world game Shenmue, as the publisher has announced that the trademark filed Monday for Shenmue 3 is a hoax. According to a statement, Sega has confirmed that the recent application for the trademark of Shenmue 3 is a fake, and looking into the origins of this application. The listing was made in the European Office of Harmonization for the Internal Market, OHIM, which has since been removed. The series was last seen back in 2002 on the original Xbox with Shenmue 2. This follows, and this is going to break Jordan. Well, it's not going to break Jordan's heart, because he probably figured this out anyway. This follows a fake OHIM listing for Fallout 4, along with a fake teaser site for The Survivor, 2299.com. So Jordan never got emotionally involved, because, you know, his heart had been broken already.
Well, the thing with Shenmue is Shenmue was so horribly expensive, it actually was one of the contributors to putting Sega almost out of business. So it doesn't surprise me that Shenmue 3 is not happening. Fans really, really, really are vocal about wanting a Shenmue 3. The problem is those same fans weren't really financially supporting Shenmue 1 and Shenmue 2. So,
I think Yakuza has sort of taken that niche anyway.
Well, Shenmue was never really mob-oriented, right?
It does have the same futzing around with a lot of stuff that have nothing to do with the game sort of thing. You know?
Right, right.
Playing pole position in-game.
Yeah. Or I spent a lot of time in Shenmue driving around on a forklift.
Did you really try to kill anybody with it?
It was so fun driving around on that forklift.
Did you try to kill someone with a forklift?
The idea was you just put boxes away.
Yeah, but it would have been better.
I finished the mission and I went and put boxes away like two or three more times.
But it would have been great because they could have had, "They tried to kill me with a forklift, olay," as you tried to do that.
I have no idea what you're talking about, and I'm assuming that most of our listeners don't either.
Have you ever played Sokoban? It was an in-game third-person version of Sokoban with a forklift.
He's talking about my musical reference there.
Oh, okay.
But enough people will recognize the reference to get a laugh out of that.
Paul, I hesitate to say this, but if you find Sokoban on the device of your choosing, we will never hear from you again. It's one of those addictive game types where all you do is push stuff around and try to get it in the appropriate spot.
Like Tetris?
No, it's not like Tetris. Imagine looking at a warehouse floor from the top, and there are three crates, and you have to get these three crates onto three specific spots.
I'm very familiar with this game.
Okay, so you know what I'm talking about. So, yeah, exactly. And if you get it into a corner,
you're screwed.
This came out for
the original NES.
It's been around forever. It was on the TurboGrafx as a game called Boxy Boy. there's been so many variations on this game, but the correct term is called Sokoban.
Okay. Anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback. Jordan?
Listener feedback from Alpha Shard. Welcome back, Paul. Hey, welcome back, Paul. I didn't know if it was for certain since Jonah said it might be. I've been listening since Dan Q joined months ago. I like how you get on my case about not being able to pick a favorite soundtrack and then go on to say how hard it is to just do that. I feel that Link to the Past is...
Pick one.
Yeah, exactly. I feel that Link to the Past is still my favorite Zelda game in the series. I didn't realize it was so heavily edited for American audiences, but I'm not surprised since it was a big practice to modify games and shows from Japan. At Bully, why would anyone want to play a game where they actually go to school? Didn't we all do enough of that? Exactly.
But you know what? We get to choose when or when we go to school, you know? We can quit at any time.
The whole point of being told to go to school is that you could ditch and hang out with the greasers.
Are those the guys you hung out with in the game? Is that it?
Actually, I hung out with the preppies a lot.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, you know, that says a lot about you.
Question of the week. Now, Jonah, what do you mean by boss battles are generally bad? That's the highlight of a good game. Like in the Zelda series, they even made a game solely about boss battles, Shadow of the Colossus.
Well, Shadow of the Colossus wasn't that good, okay, for one thing. And the thing is, you missed the point.
The opinions of Jonah Falcon do not necessarily represent those of this station or its broadcasting partner.
Anyways, moving on. The thing is that the thing about boss battles is that the more narrative a story gets, the less a boss battle fits, okay? And I'm talking about, in the sense of the context of the thing. I mean, when you play, that's one of the things that made Halo so great was that you didn't have this thing that took you out of it, in which all of a sudden this big guy comes up and stop it, okay?
It makes sense in certain styles of games. I would totally expect boss fights in an RPG. I would not expect a boss fight in a racing game.
Well, what about a fighting game? And the boss fights in fighting games suck too.
The boss fights in fighting games are interesting because they actually go a couple of different ways in that that you will either fight a mirror version of yourself or you will
fight. Those are always fun.
you will fight a whoever your arch nemesis is.
They
will,
no, each no, character has in, its arch, in terms arch of nemesis. Dead or Alive, in the Dead or Alive series, you'll fight in a way that you hadn't before in 3D, and you have to do all these jumps and all that stuff. Or in SNK games, I don't even want to get into SNK bosses. In every SNK game boss. Just makes you want to take a gun to every executive there and just say,
"This is what it feels like." Just because you can find examples of it being done poorly doesn't mean that the concept is entirely without merit.
General, right. Boss battles are best left to arcade games.
I would say arcade games. Yeah, Street Fighter 2, where you don't fight Bison at the end, would not be the same.
No, I'm talking about arcade games like 1942 or
things, I see.
You know, in which you just have to, or even games like Ikaruga, you know. Stuff like that, it fits. In a narrative story, for the most part, it doesn't fit.
Unless your story is a
narrative story.
It tends to be lazy. Whenever there's a boss battle, often I'll think, oh, they ran out of ideas on how to challenge the player at the end.
Well, you know, the Fable games were a series of boss fights.
The Fable games subverted that. Remember, in Fable 2, how do you win?
At the end of Fable 2,
you just shoot him with one bullet. Yeah.
And if you don't do anything, your companion shoots him because he's tired of hearing him talk.
Yeah. Fable did it perfectly, in which the quote-unquote boss battle wasn't a boss battle at all. Basically, it was sort of like a breather, you know, where everything escalated, but you just drove through it. You didn't care about it. Everything was escalating around you, but it was sort of like, my main thing is to get from here to there before the entire place blows up, you know.
Right.
And you know, like I said, if you're going to do a boss battle, if you're going to do a boss fight, do it right, because if there's nothing worse than a bad boss battle. And for us, and
Dead sure Bison, there is a bad boss battle with broken AI.
No, I. Anyways, because that's what Dead Rising 3, by the way, is. One is just a lot of, and it's been that way for the entire series. I would like someone. And I'm thinking of Rockstar. I would love to see what Rockstar would do with Dead Rising. Seriously, you know, as bad as they do certain things, they do know how to keep the game within the context of the. Because here's the thing about the boss battles in Dead Rising, they're contradictory to everything you've been doing with the controller until that point. You know.
Right.
I mean, during the game, you're fighting generally slow moving zombies, and everything is calibrated to you dealing with a large horde of slow-moving zombies, hundreds of them at a time. And all of a sudden, you're in a situation in which you have one quick-moving guy and you don't have peripheral vision. It just makes it a slog, you know?
That was my problem with the original Dead Rising and why I was not excited in Dead Rising 3.
Well, I was excited about Dead Rising 3 because a lot of things that are in it did change for the better,
mm-hmm.
but the boss battles...
Yeah.
And that's also what was wrong, by the way, with Deus Ex Human Revolution, the original, before they...
I remember being frustrated by the boss fights in Deus Ex. Well.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, I did all these things, and now, oh, let's see, I did hacking, and I did stealth and all that. Oh, wait, you just want me to shoot him. Oh, and by the way, I don't have a lot of health, because I didn't put my... That's one thing about RPGs as well, and Obsidian is really bad about this. My thing is, there should never be an RPG build that will not let you win. Every route that you take should allow you to win in some way or another.
Right. You have to figure it out, but yeah. you shouldn't paint yourself into a corner.
Yeah, basically. Anyways, so...
So wait, you're saying there should never be a loss condition? That sounds kind of pointless.
Well, no, there should be a loss condition. If you screw up and die, that's a loss condition. But if you know, for example, an RPG where you have a particular item, a quest item, they're not going to let you sell that in a store, because if you do that, you're going to screw up your quest.
What is that?
Right?
It's like, suppose I build a character, right? Say we're doing an AD&D game, right? And I build a character with high dex, high charisma, high constitution, but no strength or dexterity, right? That should not prevent me from being able to deal with a game. in some.
I'm just trying to imagine a character with no strength or dexterity. You just kind of flop around in bed.
Well,
a lot.
No, I mean you're. Blah, blah, blah. Well, I mean,
but you have high charisma, so you look good while you're flopping around in bed.
You're a mage, right? If you choose a certain path and you choose a certain set of skills, your character shouldn't be gimped for the rest of the game because you picked "quote unquote" the wrong kind of character.
Right.
You know.
Well, now we're talking about two completely different things.
No, but you see, it's related to the boss battles because in Deus Ex, if you didn't specialize in one set of skills, you couldn't handle the bosses.
Yeah, if you didn't have a high weapon skill in Deus Ex, you were screwed when you got to the boss fight. You could go through the entire game stealth-wise, but you could not progress past the first boss.
Yeah,
but
that's more there's one way, though, Jordan, which I figured out before they added the patch, is that I would pick up those flammable canisters and throw it at him. I keep throwing at him, and one would actually make him cough and thing, and I would shoot him after that. But it felt so contrary to my character. My character wasn't built to be like that. Now, if you have a high enough hacking, you can sneak and go up into this room that's above it and turn on a turret that'll fire for you. Something like that, you know.
My opinion is obviously unimportant.
No. You were asking questions of us. We answered your questions.
Yes, but then I tried to say something and you cut me off.
Well, I had to finish my thought, Paul. Now I finished my thought. Now you can.
I would like to hear your thought, Paul.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Jordan. You're the one I always liked more. As I was saying, I agree with you that you should be able to pick whatever character you want if that's the selling point of the game, but that's not the selling point of every game. And when it isn't, then having a boss battle is perfectly acceptable. And I'll even do you one better. Whatever example that you're citing, they should have made an AI that would have changed based on the choices that you had made in setting up your character.
You see, but
so that you would have been able to use those strengths to defeat it.
But that's basically it.
That would have been five times the programming. So like I said, it's got to be financially feasible.
Well, that was entirely the point of the original Deus Ex. You had two boss fights that you could avoid because you'd learn their kill switches, right? If you had a high hacking or whatever, you know? And basically when they confronted you, you would just give their kill switch and they'd say, "What are you talking about?" And then they'd explode because you used a different method to defeat them, right? So they got around those that way. Anyways, our question of the week is basically do you ever use a second screen to play a game? I mean, it's basically going back to, and we already discussed our part of that. Yeah.
Constantly.
Yeah.
It is my preferred method of gaming right now.
Yeah, well.
Because I can watch TV.
I watch TV while playing my Xbox One too, so I'm enjoying that as well with you, just like you.
You have a spare TV?
No, it's sort of like a picture-in-picture.
Well, that's dumb. I
like
picture-in-picture.
I play the game while I'm watching TV, you know? Anyways, I could have done this. I could have played a game while doing. I could have watched TV while doing Skype on my Xbox One if I wanted to do that. But yeah,
I'm reading Reddit while recording this. So
look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. I'll set us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum, or send us your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. You can also look for our gaming news at gamestudio.com, which has basically become just the podcast site. Also, subscribe to us to iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. And also look for Paul's new game, Team USA's Pinsanity, now on Facebook. Is that still going on?
Woohoo! Team USA's Pinsanity!
Yeah. So, anyways, exactly what goes on in that game, Paul? I mean, briefly, just because I still don't get what that game's about because I haven't checked it out yet.
Oh, collect and trade hundreds of virtual pins.
Well, pins as
in what? Hundreds of virtual pins in order to support our Olympic team as they go for the gold in Sochi, Russia.
But is there a game mechanic aside from collecting pins?
Yes, the different ways in which you collect the pins.
Oh, it was a puzzle game. Okay. Anyways.
That's exciting.
Thank you.
And it's on Facebook.
And it's on Facebook. And it is the only official social game of the United States Olympic Council.
Okay. Anyways, we'll see you next week. And that's Paul for 2 weeks in a row.
See you, everybody.
Oh, my God. If I come back next week, it's clearly the end of the world.
Right.
I got to go because you guys are keeping me from like blowing up pirates and stuff.
And I got to decide whether I want to deal with this Cyber Monday deal.
All right. Later, kids.
Do it. Bye-bye. Do it. Do it.
See you later, guys.
Do it.
Bye, Bonds.